Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, September 2nd, 2010. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. With this week, measuring specific gravity, hydrometers versus refractometers, and an invitation for you to participate in a bit of science. Homebrewer Sean Terrell and I get together over a pint or two to have a conversation in person about original gravity, final gravity, and points in between. If you're new to homebrewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. On Twitter, you can find me at basicbrewing, all one word. On Facebook, I'm facebook.com/basicbrewing.james. And you can find our show on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing. Thanks to everybody clicking on our Amazon.com associate link at our Basic Brewing site. Whenever you think of Amazon, think of us and click on our associate link first. It won't cost you any extra, and you'll be helping us to bring you this show, and we greatly appreciate your support. We also have associate links for Brew Your Own magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site, too. You can find our Basic Brewing iPhone app on the iTunes Store, and we're on the BlackBerry podcast directory, too. Well, if you tuned in this past week, you heard me read a letter from Jeff asking about using TSP, trisodium phosphate, in cleaning his homebrew gear. He said it worked, but it burned cuts on his hands and took off layers of skin. After a bit of exhaustive research on Wikipedia, I proclaimed that I wouldn't use it in my brewing. Well, first of all, Jeff is from Stratford, not Stanford, Connecticut. Sorry about that, Jeff. And as often happens on this program, I get an email from someone who actually does know something to help shed some light on the issue. And I appreciate that greatly. Bill works in a lab in Lafayette, Indiana, and he had this to say about TSP. He says, trisodium phosphate is a good cleaner and is typically used for its rinsability. Most soaps are the ionic form of fatty acid salts. They are long-chain hydrocarbons with an ionic end. The ionic end mixes well with water, while the hydrocarbon end forms are attracted to dirt and oils. The hydrocarbon end makes soap less rinsable than TSP. The phosphate in TSP acts as a fertilizer, and rinsing it down the drain is similar to fertilizer runoff. It would result in algae blooms. This is the pollution problem you describe. It's something to consider, but in small quantities probably has little effect. In the 60s, it was in laundry detergent. If you think about how much laundry is done in the U.S., you can see why that would cause a problem. The blooms could use up all the oxygen in a body of water and result in fish kills at those quantities. Bill says, regarding the use of gloves, I wholeheartedly agree. Wear them. In case your listener has any doubts, let me describe why his skin is flaking off. When you add TSP to water, it creates a phosphate buffer with the water. You get a mixture of disodium phosphate, trisodium phosphate, and sodium hydroxide. This is why the pH rises to 12. This pH is great for removing dirts and oils. The hydroxide reacts with fatty acids and creates a fatty acid salt, the soap I described above, Bill says. This pH is also great for removing skin, as you are made of many fatty acids. The burns, pain, and flaky skin is the sodium hydroxide dissolving your listener's skin. In summary, Bill says, the benefit of TSP is its rinsability. It will leave no residue and thus will not affect head retention as soaps will. The pollution concern is valid, but may not be super critical for homebrewing quantities. But above all, you must wear gloves. As a general rule, read and follow all directions on cleaning products. They are there for a reason. Thanks very much, Bill. As usual, I'm always very happy to hear from somebody who knows much more than I do and is willing to share the information. I pass that information directly on to Jeff, and he appreciates it too. You know, knowing all that about TSP, I have to say that I'm still not convinced that I want to use it in my brewing process. I like the fact that I don't have to wear gloves, and I don't have to worry about my flesh melting and that sort of thing, unless I stick it in the boiling wort, but that's another issue. But it's always good to have solid information on which to make a decision. I greatly appreciate Bill sending that information, and I appreciate the original question from Jeff, because now we all know something, or most of us know something that we didn't know before. Here's a note from Ed in Salt Lake City. Ed says, thanks for your coverage of the Beehive Brew-Off homebrewing competition, and thanks for the awesome score on my porter, first place. I know you've heard this before, but your podcast has really helped my brewing. I still have a lot to learn, so if you keep cranking out the great info, I'll keep bogarting your bandwidth. Thanks, Ed, and congratulations. That was an amazing, robust porter. Everybody agreed. All the judges that collaborated on that judging agreed that that was the winner of the category. And I'm happy I had the opportunity to taste it. Very nice work, Ed. Congratulations again. And if you're brewing beers like that, bogart all the bandwidth you like. Pete writes in to say, I am considering moving to Idaho. I am a home brewer. My best info so far on the state of Idaho. This state allows the production of home beer if you use native materials. Can you put the word out and find out what native materials means? Any lawyers out there? Native to Idaho? Native to the U.S.? Native to the planet? Help! Well, Pete, I looked up the Idaho statute on the American Homebrewers Association site, and they've got an excellent little tool there on the AHA site where you can look up your state statute. And here's what it said for Idaho. Idaho Statute Title 23, Chapter 5, Native Wine or Beer for Personal Use. It says, any person shall have the privilege of manufacturing wine or brewing beer from native-grown products for the personal use of himself, family, and guests. Interesting. They do grow barley and hops commercially in Idaho, but can you just use Idaho ingredients in your homebrew to be legal? What do you think, Idaho brewers? Is this statute even on your radar screen? Do you think about it, or do you just relax, don't worry, and have a homebrew? Let me know. Drop me a line at james@basicbrewing.com. Or just use the contact form on basicbrewing.com, and please don't forget to tell us where you're from, assuming you'll say Idaho when you do that. Now let's get on with our conversation. Sean Terrell wants your help. You've heard him on this program before a couple times. He's wanting to collect data from home brewers across the country and around the world, for that matter, and it may help you and your brewing process in the end. We'll give you details on that later in our conversation. But first, we started out talking, and I picked Sean's brain a bit on hydrometers and refractometers. Well, Sean Terrell, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio, and welcome to Northwest Arkansas.
Thank you, James. It's great to be back in both.
Now, it's rare that I get to have one of the guests that I've interviewed on the phone, so to speak, here in person. So this is a rare treat, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I guess we should probably plug the brew pub we're at.
Oh, yeah. The reason that it doesn't sound like we're in a studio, it's because we're not. We're actually enjoying some beers down here at the Hog House Brew Pub on Dixon Street in Fayetteville, Arkansas. And I'm having a tasty Pilsner. The Pilsner is actually pretty good. And you are having?
I'm having their American Pale Ale, which is frustrating me because I can't identify the hops yet.
Well, I have connections, so maybe I can find out what the hops are. But it's a tasty one?
Oh, yeah. It's excellent.
Well, very good. Well, hopefully people can live with the background noise, because we're going to have some fun talking. And, you know, it's all about the beer, and we're having beer in a beer environment, so... Just think of all the people at work now, or commuting on the bus, or on the train, or in the subway, or the tube, or wherever they are, listening to us, enjoying a pint here at... Oh, it's happy hour. You're enjoying more than a pint.
Well, I do generally listen to the podcast at work, so it's always frustrating for me. You know, you're frequently tasting things, and my mouth is literally watering.
Well, now you can be on the other side of the fence. So you asked me a question. You actually asked for some input from the listeners, which we will get to in just a little bit. You are going to be asking the listeners for some help with an experiment, so which at the end of the conversation we will talk about that. But it's essentially having to do with hydrometer readings versus refractometer readings. And what I want to do is kind of answer some questions right off from listeners who have tweeted in earlier in the day. I said we're going to be talking to Sean Terrell about refractometers and hydrometers questions. That's all I said. And we got responses, several responses, as we usually do. So are you ready, sir? Are you ready?
I hope so. I'll see if I can answer them.
We don't have a soundproof booth or anything for you to be sitting in. So, well, let's, before we get into this, because we may have some new listeners on Blackberries. You know, maybe they're new, looking at their Blackberry directories on their machines. Maybe they've never homebrewed before. Maybe they don't know what a refractometer or a hydrometer is. So maybe you can start us out with defining what each of those are.
Okay. Well, I guess we should start with hydrometers. They're probably more familiar to most homebrewers. If nothing else, when you bought your beginning homebrew supply kit, you probably had one in there. At which point you may have said, what's this funny glass thing, and thrown it away. But essentially all a hydrometer does is it floats in a liquid. It's a glass tube with a weight at the bottom. And so based on the specific gravity of the liquid, the tube will float higher or lower. And there's a paper, or sometimes if you have a really nice one, they're etched. But there's a scale on it where you read the horizontal level that's at the surface of the liquid, and you can read that as the specific gravity.
Now, when we talk about specific gravity, there sometimes you get a hydrometer, and it's got three scales on it. You've got your specific gravity, you've got your potential alcohol, and then you've got balling, or bricks, which is basically a percentage I'll let you answer. I'm about to answer the question. So what are we measuring with this thing?
You have to imagine balling didn't have a terribly happy childhood.
You're taking the higher road on the definition of that term.
Actually, I'm pretty sure he was German, so he might have gotten away with it. But the first thing that you have to know if you're using it for beer is forget the alcohol scale. It's for wine. You're not going to get an accurate reading using it on beer.
So potential alcohol out the window.
Right. The caveat there is that if you take an initial reading and a final reading and subtract to get the difference, that will be more or less accurate, although the specific gravity scale will be more accurate. So then you have your balling or bricks or Plato scale. They're basically interchangeable. The differences are well under 1%, which is literally just the percentage of sugar in solution. So a 10 Plato solution is one part sugar and 9 parts water.
So, and basically what we're trying to do is figure out how much sugar is in the solution before fermentation, and then when we take another measurement, we're going to find out how much sugar is left in the fermentation after the yeast has had its way with the wort.
Exactly. And you really need both of those readings, because the first one, the initial gravity or original gravity, tells you how large of a beer you're making, how big it's going to be. Is it a, I guess we're getting into giving specific gravities now without having defined it well. But if you're brewing an average gravity beer, that would be about 1050, 1.050. A big beer, 1070, maybe 1.100, and on up from there. And then the final gravity, or more specifically the difference, tells you, first of all, your alcohol content, which everyone is going to ask you. If you're a new brewer, you might as well start calculating it, because that's the first question.
Yeah, it's like a scorecard. Wow, this is great. How much alcohol has it got in it?
I don't know.
Or even worse, oh, you homebrew? I hear that stuff really gets you drunk.
Well, if you drink enough of it. But this leads to your comment leads to our first question. Rick in Arizona says, if you ferment for long enough and enjoy or employ traditional bare bones brewing? Is a hydrometer necessary? So is a hydrometer necessary?
No, a hydrometer is definitely not necessary. It's just giving you information. And if you're okay with not having that information, you wouldn't have to use one. I would caution especially new brewers against not using a hydrometer, especially if you're bottling. If you bottle a beer that for whatever reason has not reached the appropriate final gravity and it referments in the bottle, you could have exploding bottles. And there are home brewers who have been seriously injured.
Yeah, my response is, it's not necessary until it is.
Yeah, by the time you find out it was necessary, it's too late.
Yeah, and I, you know, every, if not every day, every week, I usually get questions from homebrewers along the lines of, is my fermentation finished? And my response to them is, did you take a hydrometer reading?
Yeah, it really is the only way to know. It's not, especially if you, there are some other parts of your process that are a little subpar, it's not unusual to have a fermentation stop before it should. And if you don't have that information, even if you're kegging, if there's no danger of exploding bottles, you're just risking making a beer that's not what you expected or what you what it should be.
So if you get fancy, you can graduate, so to speak, from the hydrometer to the refractometer. And tell us what that is.
Well, a refractometer works on an entirely different principle. What it is essentially is a tube with a few lenses in it for focusing, and it has a angled prismatic plate at one end. So you look in the opposite end and light shines through the sample that's on the prism, the angled surface, and the refractive index, how much the light is bent, will cause a line to appear on the inside of the refractometer. And then there's a scale in there that you can read where the line crosses the scale and get a gravity reading that way.
So what's going on in there? I mean, what are the, do you know the physics of why sugar does that to bending the light and all that?
Yeah, they're really very simple devices. If you don't have automatic temperature correction, which I think we'll probably talk about in a minute, it is literally just a focusing lens at the eyepiece and an angled piece of glass at the other end. And since the refractive index of a liquid, based on its sugar content, has been very well calculated over the years, based on how far the angle, the bending of the light is, you can determine how much sugar is in the water very precisely.
So there are different types of refractometers that you can get, right?
Right. We already mentioned ATC, automatic temperature correction, is a good thing to have. Other than that, most of them are marked in bricks. You might find one that's in Bollinger Play-Doh, but generally it's going to be bricks, and like I said, they're interchangeable. The other thing that's come on the market pretty recently, just within the past year or two, is there's a company out there that's making them with a specific gravity scale built right in. So it has bricks on one side, and on the other side it has specific gravity. So, you know, 10 bricks is 1.040. So it would be really handy for brewers, except the problem is they forgot to apply that wort correction factor. And so the readings don't line up properly. If you read it in specific gravity directly, it will be wrong.
So once again, don't trust your instruments until you've verified and calibrated them.
Yeah, absolutely. Calibration is always key, no matter what you're measuring.
Interesting. Daniel from Philadelphia. I'm using these questions to lead into different parts of the conversation. Daniel from Philadelphia asks, are thermohydrometers better than taking separate temperature readings from the wort? So a thermohydrometer, I'm assuming, is an instrument that has a thermometer and a hydrometer built in. Why would you need to take a thermometer temperature reading when you're taking a hydrometer reading?
Well, because just like... The density of a fluid will change based on its temperature. So even any brewer who takes reasonably good volume measurements will probably have noticed that your volume at the end of the boil, once you're done chilling, it contracts by about 4% in that case. So unless you account for the effect of temperature on the specific gravity, you're not going to be able to get an accurate reading. And so these are, in most homebrew shops, I think we'll probably carry one of these. It's essentially just a thermometer and a hydrometer in the same glass tube. And the advantage there is that if you take a temperature reading of your wort, you drop a thermometer into it, the thermometer is going to change the temperature of the liquid, unless they're exactly the same temperature. And then you go in and drop your hydrometer, it's going to change again. And if you have a very hot wort sample and it's cooling rapidly, you might not be able to get an accurate temperature reading anyway.
So I think it's Ray Daniels in Designing Great Beers. It's either Ray or it's Randy Mosher in Radical Brewing. They recommend taking a temperature, taking a hydrometer reading, then taking a temperature.
Yeah, that would be a good approach. And you could probably, if your time scale is relatively short, just take the average of the two temperature readings, and it would get you fairly close.
So this gets into one of the advantages of using a refractometer over using a hydrometer. Because, I mean, if you get your instructions with your hydrometer, it says that it is calibrated to a certain temperature. Like my hydrometer at home is, I think, calibrated to 68 degrees Fahrenheit, which is great. But if you've got boiling wort and you want to take a pre-boil or a gravity reading at that point, you've got to go through some work to get it down to 68 degrees Fahrenheit, right? Or there are formulas online, and there are some suggestions with the instructions on your hydrometer where how you can compensate, but they don't go all the way up to boiling. And you're going to have to take some time to cool down that whole tube full of a wort sample to take your gravity reading.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's just say, for example, you're an all-grain brewer. So you're sparging, you're measuring your wort coming out of the mash, and it's at 150 degrees Fahrenheit, give or take. That's really too far off of the calibration temperature to get an accurate reading from a hydrometer. You can apply that correction. A table might have come with your hydrometer, or you can look it up online. But if you're applying a correction over 70 or 80 degrees, it's not going to be accurate. Part of it is just what we said, hitting a moving target. It's cooling too fast for you to really have a great amount of accuracy on that. But also, those correction tables assume one specific gravity. The effect of temperature will be different depending on what the gravity of the wort is.
And you're talking about working with a hot fluid. So, there's some risks there, burning yourself or spilling it and, hurting. So, Tim from Eureka, Missouri asks, when is a refractometer worth the investment or expense versus a hydrometer? So if you are into taking hydrometer, if you're an all-grain brewer and you're used to taking gravity readings either before the boil or during the boil, a refractometer, the advantage to a refractometer is you only have to take a little bitty sample, right?
Yeah, that's one of the advantages. As far as the expense being justified, I would say if you're an all-grain brewer, absolutely. At retail, a refractometer is maybe $50 or $60. I got mine on eBay just under $30. Compared to $7 or $8 for a hydrometer, and over your brewing career, you'll probably break half a dozen hydrometers.
Yeah.
So you're going to come out ahead almost no matter what. Also, the big advantage, like James mentioned, with taking a really small sample with a refractometer, even if it's near boiling, when you put it on the room temperature refractometer, it's going to cool down almost immediately. You want to wait about 30 seconds to a minute, and then you can take a reading, as opposed to cooling down maybe a 3 or 4 fluid ounce sample for a hydrometer. It could take you 15 or 20 minutes to get that down to room temperature. And I guess I should go back and mention here something we glossed over, which is that I mentioned automatic temperature correction for a refractometer, which is another just really innovative engineering solution to this problem. All it is it's a bimetal strip, sort of like a thermostat, that moves the scale inside the refractometer up and down in a completely passive way with the temperature.
So does every refractometer have one of these?
Most of the commercial ones you're going to find in the price range we're talking about will. It's worth checking out. But the caveat there is that the range that it corrects for is relatively narrow. Most of them go from 10 to 30 Celsius, which is 50 to 86 Fahrenheit. So if you're outside of that, if you're brewing outside in the summer, you need to keep the refractometer in the house so that it stays at its calibrated temperature range.
Oh, that's interesting. What I generally do is I take a little spoonful of wort and set it out on the table and just let it cool for a couple. And it doesn't take any time, hardly at all, for a little spoonful of wort to cool down, as opposed to a 3 or 4 ounces. So you're saying that, I mean, I usually keep my hydrometer or my refractometer out there with me. So you're saying keep it inside.
Yeah, well, inside, I guess, depends on where you live and what the season is, but keep it inside that range, 50 to 86 Fahrenheit generally. And another thing I've found, actually, with using my refractometer is that if I do your method, if I just leave a sample out to cool off, I get enough evaporation that it actually throws off the reading.
Oh, well, that's a good point.
I found that especially near boiling, I need to draw off with, I use a small syringe.
Or a little pipette thingy?
Yeah. Plastic drinking straws make a great poor man's pipette.
There you go. As long as it, yeah, plastic paper wouldn't work very well.
Not for long, anyway.
And good luck finding a paper drinking straw. I'm old. Now, Andy Sparks tweeted, he said, ask about the effects of turbidity on refractometers. So first of all, tell us what turbidity is, and then how would that affect a refractometer reading?
Turbidity, the simplest possible explanation would be it's a measure of how cloudy a fluid is. So I think pretty much all brewers will have noticed that, you know, during fermentation, your wort's very cloudy. You have yeast kicking around in there. They're throwing all kinds of proteins around. And then after fermentation dies down, things settle out. The beer clears over time. Turbidity will not in and of itself in beer throw off a refractometer reading by more than your margin of error anyway. We're talking about solids that are basically just floating in suspension. They aren't actually dissolved. What it does do is it spreads out the line, and it could spread it out to the point that you have trouble getting an accurate reading. I have trouble with that myself. The best I can say is look at a nice bright white light source so that you get the sharpest image possible and try to eyeball the center of the line.
Yeah, Duncan from Sacramento, California asked, the line is fuzzy on the refractometer. Do you read the top, the middle, or the bottom?
You read the center.
So, and there is a focus knob on the end of the refractometer where you can focus that, which I found more important as I get older.
If I'm not wearing glasses, that does me no good whatsoever.
So we might have covered all of it. Oh, Arnold says, ask about automated fermentation status sensors. I would time travel for one of those.
Yeah, we were kind of speculating about that a minute ago. And I think you might have to time travel to get one. I don't know for sure that, you know, the big guys don't have something like that, but I've never seen one in person.
Who knows? Here, you know, 10 years or so, people may be taking a tarot reading on their...
or an Arnold reading. I mean, invent one and get it into a homebrewer's price range. You'd have quite a market on your hands.
There you go. And hook it up to the web, and I think you'd really have something going on there.
I did try to do that once. I pointed a webcam at a temperature sensor that was in my fermenter, so I could monitor it while I was away from home.
Yeah, there are actually tweeting fermentation fridges out there. So, you name it, it's been done when homebrewers are.
I really wish I didn't think that was interesting.
You're at home. But both John Kruger and Foundation Man, as you can tell, it's really hard to read my handwriting. They both asked about the calculations to use on fermented beer with a refractometer. Because you can use a hydrometer to take original gravity readings and final gravity readings and do your calculations on your apparent attenuation, your alcohol percentage, all that. Why can't you just use straight readings from the refractometer before and after?
Well, you actually can't use a straight reading from a refractometer before or after. The reason being that refractometers, at least the handheld ones that we're talking about for the most part, are designed and built for the wine industry. They're measuring grape musts, which are a pure sucrose solution, just sucrose in water. And since beer is this cocktail of other sugars, maltose, maltotriose, sucrose, glucose, fructose, maltotetrose, all kinds of things, you have to correct somewhat. most of the literature that I've seen says you divide by 1.04. So let's take, say you take a reading on your refractometer and you read 20 bricks. Dividing by 1.04, I'm going to hang myself here.
Yeah, do that in your head.
You're going to get to 19.2 bricks.
Oh, wow.
Roughly. And when we're talking about 1 degree bricks or Ballinger Play-Doh, we're talking about roughly 4 gravity points, 1.004 specific gravity. So if you're off by 8/10 bricks, you're talking about 3 gravity points, which I think, I know I personally at least would like to measure more precisely than that for my gravities. Okay, so that's pre-fermentation. Post-fermentation, we have a completely different problem, because instead of having a more or less two-phase solution, we have sugar and water, we now have sugar, water, and alcohol. And so to be able to measure the refractive index, you have to make an assumption about at least one of those variables. So without going into too much of a mathematical digression, one variable is not enough to solve a three-variable system. You need to know two, and so you need to take an original gravity reading in order to determine final gravity.
So this is the we're getting to the crux of the situation. We're getting toward the meat of the matter here, so to speak.
or towards the point where people who don't care about the science should tune out.
Oh, hey, this audience is with you all the way, Sean, I think. I think I know my audience. If they've been with us for 5 years, they've been through rougher waters than this technical wise. So, and they're thinking, hey, yeah, this is this. And the thing about it is that if we get way geeky on this podcast, the end result is that people make better beer, and so that's the whole thing. So we're making people more popular, making them more geeky. That's my. So why does this matter to you? I mean, what have you been doing lately?
Well, basically what I've been doing lately is brewing a lot and running some experiments. We talked about my pitching rate experiment, where I wanted to take a gravity reading every day during fermentation so that I could compare the two fermenters, see how they were both progressing. And if I had to pull a hydrometer reading every day, number one, it's just kind of a hassle, opening up the fermenter, sanitizing a thief, drawing off a sample. But it's also a pretty significant amount of wort after a while. I think probably, 3 or 4 fluid ounces, roughly. So if you'd have to take a dozen readings, you've just taken 3 or 4 pints away from yourself.
So you've been trying to do the refractometer thing.
Yeah, a refractometer would really be ideal, because you need to take less than a milliliter, really. You need about 3 drops to get a reading on a refractometer. So there's an advantage there, even if eventually it turns out you have to use a hydrometer to get a truly accurate final gravity for your beers, assuming you need one. You can use the refractometer to know when fermentation is done without wasting a significant amount of beer.
So there are formulas out there, one formula out there, that brewers use to compensate for the weirdness of taking a gravity reading with alcohol in the sample and all the other stuff to try to figure out final or the alcohol content of their beer. So you were using that formula, and you found it in several places, right?
Yeah, actually, I've never found in any sort of brewing software or literature or website any other formula. At least as far as I've come across, there's only the one that's out there. And it's a reasonably simple equation. It's a simplified cubic with just 2 variables, the original refractive index in bricks and the final refractive index in bricks.
So give us an idea of what the formula is. I mean, what are we looking at? I mean, is there an easy way to, if people are riding on the subway train, is there an easy way to kind of talk about what this formula is?
Yeah, so I said it's a simplified cubic, so it has 7 terms. There's a dimensionless term, and then first, second, and third, there's an x squared, an x cubed, and a y squared, and y cubed, except instead of x and y, it's original refractive index and final refractive index. So it's seven terms. The coefficients are a little unwieldy because they're so small, 10 to the minus 5, 10 to the minus 6. But, you know, you put it in a spreadsheet or your brewing software has it built in, it's not unmanageable. I wouldn't want to solve it by hand.
So you started taking gravity readings with a refractometer, compensating with this formula, and then taking gravity readings with a hydrometer, right?
Right. And after I started doing that for a few beers and actually not losing my brewing notes, I realized that the default correlation, we'll call it, was always low. I eventually ended up with 12 data points, and on those 12 beers, it was anywhere from 1 to 9 gravity points low. And the average was about 5 gravity points. So, I mean, that's really to the point where, for me, it's pretty much unusable. I don't consider 5 gravity points in my brewing to be an acceptable amount of error.
So for the casual brewer, this may not mean anything. But if you're trying to do scientific experiments to compare variables in the brewing process, like pitching rate and such as that, then it starts to make a little difference.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, actually, pitching rate wouldn't be affected because we're strictly talking post-fermentation at this point.
So how much difference does this make? I mean, we were just talking about a few gravity points here.
Yeah, like I said, the average discrepancy that I found in these 12 beers was about 5 points, which would be somewhere around 0.5% alcohol. So if you're getting that question that I find so annoying, you know, if nothing else, you should, at least I would want to tell people the truth.
So you're wanting input from our audience to help you with this examination of this formula.
Right. So what I did based on these 12 beers that I took samples from is I just went through and fitted an entirely new curve. Like I said, the average discrepancy for this default correlation is about 5 points, and the one I have now is about 1.1 points.
So we're getting a little better.
Yeah, and that's to the point where I would consider that acceptable for everyday use. You know, a normal, cheap, homebrew-level hydrometer is going to be better than 1 point. Maybe you could read it to 0.5 point, but that's really about the best you're going to get. So from my personal standard, if I could get the refractometer reading down to that level, I would actually be confident in using it as a replacement for the hydrometer.
So what do you need from the brewers out there? What can they give you to help you with this situation?
Well, my concern at this point is that there might be some X factor, basically, that I know at this point, and I've actually taken 3 more readings outside of those 12, and every one of those has been within 1 point. But that only proves to me that it works in my brewery for my beers. And I really don't want to generalize and try to publicize this too much, you know, speaking about it on a podcast notwithstanding.
It's just us.
Until I get some sort of verification from, you know, at least a few other brewers that this is reasonably accurate.
So if I want to help you out, what points of data do I need to collect and document and send to you?
All you would need to do is take, the bare minimum would be to take an original gravity reading with a hydrometer or refractometer. It wouldn't necessarily matter which, as long as you are correcting properly for your instrument. And then a final gravity reading using both a hydrometer and a refractometer. And ideally, I'd like people to use both for final and original gravities.
And then they send that information to you how?
I suppose we'll put a link on Basic Brewing.
Okay.
But my website is seanterrell.com, which I must be popular because you can spell it wrong several different ways and Google will still get you there.
And so an original gravity reading and then a final gravity reading with both the refractometer and the hydrometer. And they should probably calibrate their hydrometer before they do either of those readings, right?
Yeah, it's worth mentioning that you should calibrate both instruments. Essentially, all you need to do is use water. Distilled water would be ideal, but frankly, most tap water is going to be just fine. For a refractometer, you put a couple drops of water on the plate, you look through it, this will be that one magical situation where the line is perfectly sharp, and you want that line to be right on 0.000.
And if it's not, then you compensate with
right.
your...
There's a small screw somewhere on the body of the refractometer that you can adjust. And you do want to make sure that you're at the calibration temperature, which is generally the center of the ATC, automatic temperature correction range for the refractometer. So a few degrees isn't going to make a huge difference, but somewhere in the 59 to 68 degree Fahrenheit range would be ideal.
So that, I think that you'll get a bunch of readings over the next few weeks and months. Is there a deadline that you want to set, or do we just want to collect data as it goes on and kind of refine things as time goes on?
Well, to get reasonable statistics on this, I would really like to get data sets that are 5 points per brewer. I know for a lot of people that's probably 6 months worth of brewing, which I have absolutely no problem with if they're willing to keep track of that for me.
Well, there you go. And at the end of it, maybe we'll come out with a formula that is more accurate?
Yeah. I can't promise you much more than that, but in thinking about this, what got me so frustrated initially is that the physics should not be terribly complicated. There are two variables, and we have a three-variable equation, so it should be possible to solve it. So if nothing else, if that bugs you a little bit, maybe we'll get an answer.
Well, I'm betting you that there are more than a handful of brewers out there that are going to keep you in mind next time they're brewing. And like I say, I mean, they're going to be most of the brewers that we're talking about that care about this kind of thing are going to be taking at least two of those measurements already, and all they got to do is add the third measurement at the end of fermentation with that second instrument, whether it's a refractometer or the hydrometer. So I think this is going to be fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really looking forward to getting feedback from some people. I'm on the road now, so I haven't been able to follow up, but we were having an interesting discussion in one of the forums with AJ DeLange, who some people will at least recognize the name, is really one of the preeminent brewing scientists out there. And he has a lot of insight and also access to a lot better instruments than most of us. So, you know, he's interested in the problem. He recognizes that it's sort of frustrating. And I think we can get a lot of support for trying to do some good science.
Excellent. You know what else I'm looking forward to? Another beer.
Absolutely. We can stop talking and start drinking.
There you go. Well, Sean, it's awesome to meet you in person, and I appreciate your coming down here and let me feed you this evening.
Absolutely. I'm not going to argue with that.
Thanks, Sean.
Likewise, it's been great to meet you.
Awesome. Well, we will get on with the real business of this evening, and hopefully people will keep you posted, or you keep us posted to see if people are complying. And we'll give a reminder out there every now and then.
Yeah, definitely.
Thanks, Sean.
Thank you.
Well, that was a fun evening. So for the next 5 or 6 batches, keep Sean Terrell in mind. Collect original gravity readings with at least one of the instruments, and then, after fermentation, collect readings with your hydrometer and a refractometer and send your data to Sean. I'll put a link to his site in the description of this episode on basicbrewingradio.com. And who knows, you may be helping improve the refractometer post-fermentation correction formula. Pretty exciting. And we'll keep you posted as we go along, and maybe send you a reminder every now and then. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. You can check out our homebrewing DVDs, Introduction to Extract Home Brewing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. On our site, we've got combo deals to save you a few bucks if you want to buy more than one DVD at a time. And you can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in our store, too. You can see a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com. And if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order them online in our online shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are CK Products 1 3/4 inch airplane chocolate mold. And Farmhouse Ales, Culture and Craftsmanship in the Belgian Tradition. And that is a Kindle ebook. So there you go. Look for brewing books in the Kindle ebook form. And you can, you don't have to have a Kindle to read a Kindle ebook. You can download a free reader for your computer or your phone or your iPad as well. Thanks again, everybody. And remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping, and we appreciate your support. And don't forget that you can also join the American Homebrewers Association and subscribe to Brew Your Own magazine with the links on our site as well. That's all until next time, everybody. Until then, thanks for listening. I'm James Spencer. Just a couple of weeks until GABF. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.